and welcome to Blogosphere Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley, and I'm the founder of Blogosphere, which hopefully you've heard of. But if not, Blogosphere is a media company rooted in the world of influencers. We run events, an influencer network, and publish a nationally distributed print magazine, and now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, be sure to tweet us your suggestions. Our Twitter handle is @BlogosphereM. And if you want to learn more about influencers and the influencer industry, be sure to visit blogosphere magazine.com and invest in a subscription to our essential magazine. I'm delighted to announce that this series of Serious Influence is being exclusively sponsored by our very own tech platform, the Blogosphere Network. The Blogosphere Network is a platform where brands and influencers can feedback on what it was actually like to work with each other on campaigns. Real, qualitative data. If you'd like a demo of the service, please drop us an email at info@blogosphere.biz. That's info@blogosphere.biz. It's time to bring back the human touch to this human industry. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, I'm joined by Zoe Crawford, who works in the partnerships team at media agency The Seven Stars. After working at a startup and seeing the impact of influencers on brands, Zoe moved to The Seven Stars in 2016 and has worked with clients such as Iceland and Deliveroo on campaigns. Zoe likes integrated campaigns and believes that 2019 will be the coming of age for influencer marketing.
My name is Zoe Crawford and I work at The Seven Stars, which is a media agency. For about the past 5 years, I've been working in brand marketing and partnerships, specifically with influencers and events. And yeah.
Now excellent.
Now I work at The Seven Stars.
Perfect. So tell me a bit more about how you got to The Seven Stars. What was your background and how have you found yourself in influencer marketing?
Initially, I actually worked for a startup and we were looking to launch a new brand in Berlin. And funnily enough, that was my first introduction to influencer marketing because I think they're the best in class at brand marketing. So the first influencer I followed was actually Em Sheldon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is really funny because I've had a few conversations with her and I'm like, oh, should I tell her? Should I not?
So have you worked with her since?
No, we have had a few discussions though, but there hasn't been quite the right opportunity yet. But it has been quite interesting talking to influencers, obviously, that initially I used to follow and then ended up working within the industry itself. So that's always been quite nice.
When did you first get into social media yourself? What were your platforms that you were on?
So that goes all the way back to MySpace.
Really?
My age now. Yeah, MySpace, and then Facebook was huge for me, and then Instagram ended up being the hero platform that it is now, just very visual, although I'm quite passive. And when I'm outside of work, I don't really tend to engage. Mm. I'm one of those annoying people who just sees it all but doesn't actually engage with it. So it's quite interesting kind of when in work, I'm all over it. And then I guess outside of it, I quite like to be a passive user.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just it's so full on during work and that you need to have that break?
I think it's really interesting, actually, because a lot of social media managers in particular that I've met have the same kind of relationship with social. They're all over it at work. But then generally speaking, outside of it, I find that quite a few people don't even have those profiles or have their own profiles just because it associates to work now. But I do tend to still follow all the influencers that we're working with and ones that I'm passionate about. And I quite enjoy just looking and seeing what everyone's up to, but not necessarily engaging or sharing so much myself.
So when you were working with the startup, what was the startup called?
It was called Beyonder.
Beyonder.
Yeah.
And what was the...
So that was a serviced apart hotel company, which got bought out by Seiko, which is one of the biggest serviced apartment companies in the UK. But it was really fun because it was a really creative company in which we built a brand based on a orange astronaut was our brand logo. Very different. We were looking for kind of creativity and making sure that our brand guidelines were really hot, and that was really key to the actual startup. So I think through that, I started to learn a lot more about influencers at that point and then had more of an interest in them as to how they could affect a startup or they could affect a brand or how they were almost brands within themselves.
What year are we in now when you're doing this?
Oh, that was 2015.
And so it's subsequently been bought. So was your main marketing
recruit influencers for that startup, or were you in charge of marketing as a whole?
Marketing as a whole. So there were actually only 10 of us in that company at that point. So it covered quite a few different roles. I was sat within kind of the marketing team, but also looked after things like events and PR. And then that took me on to my next role, which was more marketing kind of driven and social driven. I think because I was a bit younger, everyone assumed I'd be better at digital and social and kind of have that experience and background just because of my age.
Was that you pushing then, I think that we should try influencer marketing, or them saying, oh, you're a bit younger, you must understand what's going on social media?
I think a bit of both. Yeah. I think there is that misconception that just by age, you therefore know digital. Obviously, I think you're slightly more aware of it. I was really interested and kind of brought to the forefront how we noticed that influencers were just starting to phase in a little bit at that point. And we were really keen to bring them to the forefront and copy effectively how they brand themselves.
What was one of the influencer marketing campaigns that you did at that time with the startup?
So at that point, we didn't actually do an influencer campaign. At that point, it was more so looking and learning from the influencers themselves, how they did the branding and how we could almost copy that for our own branding purposes. It wasn't until later on that I actually started working directly with influencers, particularly at the Seven Stars.
So how did this move happen? The startup got bought and then you moved over?
Yeah.
And going from startup to an agency that's been around for quite a while?
Yeah, so my friend actually recommended it to me because the company culture is amazing and they're an independent agency headed up by Jenny Bigham, who's a really inspirational female leader.
We like those.
Yeah, we love those, all for those. And it was really interesting actually because when I joined, there was only one other girl who was in the influencer department. And I learned really quickly that influencers were massive. I think at the time I joined, there was a real surge in interest in influencers, particularly within marketing budgets. We're seeing kind of growth year on year with those. But I think at that point, it was this hot new thing that all influencers and marketers were really interested in, but didn't necessarily understand. They just knew they had to kind of spend with it.
And what year is that then that you moved over?
That was 2016 that I moved over. So that was really interesting to see.
I do feel like that was the first generation of big influencer marketing. I feel that we're in second, probably even third wave influencer now, but as the industry grew, it was the marketing side kind of kicked in hard in 2016. There had been a kind of campaigns and things before, but that's when it really started moulding itself as an industry.
Definitely. I think it was kind of almost trickling in before. But then 2016, it was just like a waterfall. Suddenly everyone was all over it. They just knew they had to be a part of it, which was really exciting, really interesting to be a part of that dedicated team that time. Because before it was always an element of marketing, whereas at that point, moving to the Seven Stars, I got to fully encompass it, which was great.
So did you get to do campaigns that were purely influencers, or was it the Seven Stars already had a client and then that was an add-on to it, if that makes sense?
So a mixture of both. So one of the first campaigns I ever worked on was with Iceland Foods pushing chicken nuggets.
Okay.
And then it kind of moves all the way through to being a part of more 360 campaigns where we're tying into things like out of home as well as TV. So, for example, we just had a delivery event with Time Out, and that was more of like a event partnership. And from that, we got tastemakers from Time Out to join the event. So it then becomes much more kind of 360. So I think what's actually happening within the industry, which is really nice, is that influencers are being tied in and thought of as a whole and as part of the bigger picture instead of just as a segment, which I think is really important to the overall success. And I actually think putting influencers even in things like out of home or even within TV, more so than celebrities, is something that we'll start to see more frequently in the next year.
Definitely, because everything that you do with influencers that isn't on social media tracks back to social media.
Exactly.
Mm. With this Iceland chicken nuggets campaign, can you tell me a bit more about that? What was the campaign brief? What were you trying to achieve? And was it successful, etc.?
So that one was all about showing off that Iceland Food had 100% chicken breast within it. Slightly similar actually to McDonald's campaign, I think it was last year, where it was kind of all the bits in it. They were showing off the quality of the product and also the versatility of it. So it doesn't necessarily have to be chicken nuggets and chips. I think we had a bunch of male and female parenting bloggers showing how you could do things. I think one guy did a lemon chicken nugget with rice. He made it into almost like a curry of some sort. It was really interesting, or like Asian style, like bringing in loads of different cuisine types to effectively make chicken nuggets more exciting.
And how did you source the influencers on that campaign?
So on that campaign, we have existing relationships with a variety of influencers. The tool that we use at the moment is called Hyper, which is really effective. It looks not only at the influencer themselves, but their audiences, which I think is really important.
It's called Hyper.
Hyper, yeah, H-Y-P-R. And we're kind of growing more interested as our marketers in influencers' audience as well as the influencer demographic themselves. So at that point, it was more focused on targeting parents. So we were looking towards parent influencers, which we still work with today, where relevant. So I think that's really nice where we've built relationships with people from day dot and seeing them going all the way through and understanding what their interests are and able to seize those opportunities where potentially they may not be obvious on their platform, but because we have those relationships, because we have that tool which allows us to see all the demographics and the stats that we need, we can make really informed choices as to who to use.
What are the stats that you do look for?
So we'll look for things like, weirdly, location is one of the biggest ones, because obviously there can be quite a bit of wastage with every influencer. It's a global platform, therefore we see quite a lot of influencers who we think will be great for the UK, but we may find out that they have actually a massive following in the US or China, or sometimes there's some really weird curveballs in there that you're not expecting. So it's really great to kind of have that tool to filter out what works best. And even if we do think that influencer has, for example, a slightly larger audience within the US, there's always potential, I think, to have that conversation with them and see, based on those stats, what percentage they have of UK following, whether there's something that we can do with them. So it kind of helps us kind of inform our negotiations and our conversations with those influencers and see what works best.
Do you sometimes write a long list of influencers who would be your ideal influencers for that campaign and then run them through that platform? Or do you use the platform first to get an output of influencers that would be on brand? In which order does it do? Is it the human element first and then the ad tech, or the ad tech and then the human?
It's a bit of both, I think. So, I mean, sometimes there'll be a brief and you'll immediately think of someone, or there's an opportunity that comes up and you'll effectively be like, this person's been waiting for this for a really long time. It would be mad not to use them. But then there are other moments where you always want to do the research and make sure that you are putting the best person forward. So generally speaking, I think there's that level of relationships and the human touch first, where you'll think of a general list, but then we're always going back it up with the research and then have that soft touch at the end just to make sure that they are right for that brand. It's a mixture of everything, which is why I think it's really great at the Seven Stars, because they're effectively a relationship-driven agency, but they're really pushing for transparency within all media, not just influencer marketing. I think that's something that we're really pushing for as well.
In terms of how a brief works, will it be the brand gives you the brief and then you fulfill it, or does the brand give you budget and then you create the brief and then find the influencers to work on it?
So it really depends. So for example, there's so many different ways that can come about. It could be that we're pitching for new business. So it always starts with the insight, not the reach. So for example, we'll start off by doing a fair amount of social listening and research to come up with the insight. Then we'll come up with a proposed strategy, and at that point we'll find the partner. So that's when we start to kind of have a look around and see who we think's the best fit for that brief. It could be that the client at the beginning already kind of has the insight prepared and has a proposed strategy, but usually we'll add in a bit of our own flavour to it to make sure it aligns with what we believe, and that tends to work best, we find. And then after that, it's making sure from end to end that the campaign goes really well. And then also we are trying to push more and more the amplification of that content. I think hopefully we'll see that a bit more within kind of the next 6 months.
How are you amplifying the content?
So because we work at a media agency, we're really quite lucky to have a specialist paid social team. And within that team, effectively, we can lean on them to figure out how best to amplify that content through all social channels. But then we can also look at things like, for example, if there's an opportunity within out of home or even digital where we can repurpose that content and put it on. For example, Girl Outdoors ran a campaign and we ended up with Ben Fogle on their website as well as their social, which was great. And I'm kind of hoping that that goes on more and more.
Does that have to be specified in the contract? So, for instance, if you're an influencer and you're brought on to do some promotion across YouTube and Instagram, and then the imagery that you use then gets put on billboards, do they get paid more for that?
Yeah, 100%. So we always have contracts at the Seven Stars, and that's part of the strategy at the very beginning before we even choose the partner, where we decide exactly how that content will be used, who ideally we would like to work with, and within the contract we kind of lay out the usage rights. Generally speaking, we try to have usage rights. It can be anything from a month all the way through to a year. So if we have a client who's particularly interested in reusing that content for up to a year, on things like billboards or out of home, then we'd probably go for a year. Whereas if it's only on their social, we'd probably use it for a month whilst it's still relevant. Mm. It varies from each campaign, but we find it to be invaluable to have those usage rights, even if it's just for a month.
Because there are some influencer platforms where the sell to the influencer is you don't just get to put your content here, but then your content can be seen across billboards, which they're not being paid extra for that. Do you think that that is viable and has much longevity to it? Or do you think people will cotton on to the fact that actually I'm producing something that would take a different team a lot of time and a lot of money?
I think that's something actually that we're seeing more. So especially within the last 6 months, I think the discussion over usage rights, initially before there was almost like an exchange where you'd effectively offer the client's reach as a value exchange for it. Whereas now it's being taken a bit more seriously by clients and influencers themselves, where they kind of understand the value of effectively what a creative agency would charge. And I think having that relationship with an influencer is important, with the client as well as from the media agency to the influencer themselves, to kind of have an understanding of exactly how that content's going to be used and that trust. So we tend to ask for those usage rights, but then we always try and forward on those links of what content is being used by the client, because generally speaking, more often than not, the client will always ask for usage rights just in case and then try and fit it into their social plan. Sometimes we're unsure, but we get it there as a bit of a safety net. So it's a bit hard. It's kind of how long's a piece of string. I think if the campaign and strategy are kind of solid and set in stone as to exactly how they're going to be using that media effectively and that content, then we can really clearly let the influencer know how it's going to be used. And if it is to the point where it's going to be used on billboards or in store, for example, then that's usually really clear to us from the beginning, and we can take that influencer on that journey. More often than not, what we're finding is that clients are asking for usage rights just for on social. And I think that every kind of form of usage, there should be some kind of fee personally, because effectively you're paying for the creative. And I think that's something that we're seeing more and more. And I completely agree that, you know, influencers should be, basically they should be able to charge for creating content, doing that campaign, and also to have their content put up everywhere, because it's exactly the same as a creative agency.
You mentioned in the last 6 months those conversations have been going on. Since you joined the Seven Stars in 2016, how do you feel that the industry itself has professionalised, and do you think we're seeing that more and more?
I think it's really interesting. I think in the past few months, influencer marketing in particular has come under the spotlight from the media in particular. I think it's been given a little bit of a Wild West image recently, and I think 2019 will be the year that it comes of age. I think we're going to have to be more transparent in terms of hashtag ad. We're seeing that with the likes of, I know, Zoella and Rita Ora were in the news the other day. I think that's coming under fire quite a bit. So I think we'll see some more transparency. I think there's also going to be a bit more regulation enforced from platforms themselves as well as influencers. I know Facebook are creating a new kind of creators profile that will allow more visibility on the stats and effectively the success of a campaign. So I think we'll start to see that. I think it's something that everyone is realizing that it's kind of important to have, especially in influencer marketing, because effectively the whole premises of influencer marketing is looking to someone like me and effectively someone that I trust. So it's so important that we have that, whether that's looking to Facebook, because obviously they make a lot of money through influencer marketing as well. So it's in their interest really to make sure that they are still the platform that influencers look to and use. Or even on YouTube, I know that there's this amazing growing appetite. You know, year on year, we're seeing client spend increasing. We're seeing more influencers to the point where the market's nearly saturated. There's always the discussion of, is everyone an influencer now? Obviously, we've got the advocates, we've got the celebrities, we've got digital celebrities, we've got mid-level influencers. There's so many different terms and terminologies. And I think with that, we're going to see a lot more competition within the market, which is really great and really healthy. I think it's going to be more important than ever for influencers to stay true to their brand, and potentially for us to look to create more long-term relationships instead of one-off campaigns, so that that authenticity stays there.
Mm. Do you think that monetizing, you just mentioned how saturated the market is now and that ostensibly anybody can be an influencer, and now due to platforms launching, no matter what you're following, you can earn money from it. So there are so many people monetizing. So the platforms now are saturated with branded content, and that, as you say, not necessarily the longer term partnerships, but the one-offs, which you're going to try and avoid doing. But do you think that that is actually damaging the trust in the industry as a whole?
I think it's a really interesting conversation. There's been kind of a debate internally in our agency as to whether as influencer marketing grows and becomes more common, and effectively at the end of the day, influencers want to make money. So will their own content become more commercialized just naturally over time as kind of time goes on, because they know that that's what will appeal in terms of brand safety towards clients in terms of creating those long-term relationships and increasing that spend for themselves. So I think it will be really interesting because we'll see that competition. I think we'll see the quality of content just continue to grow, which really is what we want. And I think that level of professionalism and transparency, I think that will sit above the rest. And I think potentially we'll see almost, I don't want to say a cut through of kind of the top tier quality influencers who are really dedicated to kind of following that and kind of brands who want to align with them. But I think there will be the start of a small divide potentially. But again, it depends exactly on what the client's looking for, because obviously advocacy is so important and going, I think there's obviously that trend towards, if you're looking for high engagement, then the way to go is to people who are new to the market and have those pure passions and potentially a low reach. So I think there's opportunity for everyone. It's just, I don't know, it's really interesting to see.
I suppose it's not just on the influencers, it's on the brands, what they want to achieve. And people don't mind being sold to. You know, people like good ads, but it's when there are just lots of holding up product that doesn't sit quite as right. And then that's damaging for everybody.
Exactly. I think what we're going to see a lot more is the need to be creative. So because the market is saturated, like we were talking about, I think just holding up a product no longer suffices, and it doesn't necessarily engage audiences like it maybe once used to, because where before that would have cut through, now it's kind of much of the same. So I think in order for clients and influencers to be successful, we kind of really need to think about that strategy at the beginning and that insight and think, how can we grab these people's attention and get that cut through? I think in terms of the amount of content that people are seeing, it's really interesting, because even with younger demographics, we know that 70% of teenage audiences on YouTube are more likely to be influenced by YouTubers than celebrities. So there's still that growing appetite for it, because we know that I think it's half of the top 20 YouTubers are influencers. So I think even though it is saturated, we're also becoming quite accustomed to it. So I think before as well, where particularly kind of, I know celebrities have come under attack recently where they're not using hashtag ad. I think where before we would have not necessarily been able to identify it, I think consumers now can.
Yeah.
So I think that level of transparency is really important. And I think people are starting to accept it and consumers are starting to become accustomed to it. And it's just how we play it as a market in order to still engage them, still retain that trust, and still effectively have that cut through that all clients are after.
I do think on the whole that digital first influencers, which is how we can might separate, like we wouldn't do celebrities that are by default influencers. We only cover people that have made their name solely through social media, are better at disclosing, which is interesting, because you would have thought that the celebrities would probably have had more access to education and management that would have been able to advise them. We were doing a panel Serious Influence Live, and Sarah Tasker from Mianola was saying that she'd been sent a list of people from Strictly Come Dancing to ask how much they would have probably made from those posts. She's like, never mind about how much they would have been paid. Look how few of them have disclosed. One dancer's dancing with a Hoover and there's no ad. It's like, there couldn't be more of an ad. So again, I think with everything gets kind of lumped together, and actually there are so many different people doing it at so many different levels that it is a shame when we all get tarred with the same brush.
Yeah.
What are the most common problems that you see in influencer marketing as a whole? And when brands are coming to you and wanting to investigate, are there any common problems that you find that they're asking for?
I think one of the first things that we talk to all our clients about is effectively trying not to get them in front of the creative, or stopping that creative flow that makes influencers who they are and as successful as they are. It's really difficult, especially with clients who have to go through so many hoops effectively to get creative live, for them not to interfere with that journey and to have a really prescriptive brief that doesn't really allow them to be very creative. I think especially now it's more important than ever for influencers to have that creativity. And what's quite nice as a media agency is we're almost the middleman. So we can push back a bit on the client or sometimes on the influencer to make sure it's right for both of them and that they meet in the middle. But I think especially for influencers going client direct, to make sure that they have those conversations, to make sure that at the end of the day, the content will work for both parties. Because effectively, it is a partnership. You should be working together to create something that will work for both of you, not just one or the other, in order to make it as successful as possible.
In terms of your timings as well, is it half of your job is going to pitch and then half is fulfilling?
To be honest, it's a bit of everything. So it really depends. I think within 2016, it was very much pitching, or we'd have clients coming in and then they'd discover that we had an influencer marketing department, and then they were just keen to kind of get us in. There was that real hunger to just get involved. Whereas now it's slowing down slightly and being a bit more formalized, which I think it needs, and a bit more regulated and true almost interrogation of how will influencer marketing work for the campaign that I'm currently running? How does it fit in? Which again, I think in terms of integration is really important. I think before it was slightly siloed because no one really knew how to work it. Mm. Whereas now, as we're seeing that more and more, it's becoming part of a bigger strategy and a bigger media or advertising campaign, which I think is really important and quite exciting for all influencers kind of involved.
Do you work for clients just on influencer marketing? Like, will you go out and pitch and just your influencer marketing team fulfills that brief? Or are most of your campaigns already with existing clients of the Seven Stars?
Again, it's a complete mix. So sometimes we'll have a brand new client come in who will just be looking for influencer marketing. Generally speaking, as a media agency, not an influencer marketing agency, we will be pitching for more than one type of media. Or it could be, for example, that we've got an existing client that we pitch in the idea to include influencer marketing within their strategy or plan. So that's effectively pitching for that business on a side note. Or it could be that, for example, we see an opportunity and kind of bring it to them, and it's not as much of a pitch, more of a soft sell. So it really depends on the client, how long we've had them for, and where the opportunities lie.
When you do go to an existing client who's not using influencer marketing and suggest that they should think about it as part of their strategy, how many of them say no, and what are their reasons?
Oh, that's a good question. So I think for some clients, there's a bit of a nervousness around it because of that slight lack of control of effectively handing their creative over to someone or a group of individuals. I think, especially in terms of lead times, it takes a lot longer than the rest of media. It's whether the timings and marketing plan allow for that. I think we've had a bit of pushback on that before.
Why does it take longer?
Generally speaking, because we find that the best quality content comes out of campaigns that aren't rushed, out of creative that isn't rushed, and to make sure, again, from that partnership perspective, that both parties are winning. So if we do try and do an influencer marketing campaign, really kind of on a tight turnaround and things, I think it just adds a bit of pressure on the client and the influencer, and it potentially opens up the field for potential mistakes or misunderstanding or miscommunication that we just don't really want to happen.
What is the sort of time period that you would feel comfortable with on an influencer campaign? Is that sort of 3 months or?
I think it depends completely on the brief. So it changes and varies from client to client and with each influencer as well, because obviously there's their schedule to think about as well, because we're dealing with humans. Mm. And I think that's something that we're always trying to educate clients as, you know, you're not just buying a media, you're buying effectively a person and working with them much as you would kind of your own team. You wouldn't put people under unnecessary pressure if you could have a much more enjoyable experience, which is what we always kind of strive for.
Because the turnaround on other forms of media then can be quite fast.
Yeah, exactly. So with things like social, the turnaround times are under a week, whereas we try not to ever get in that situation with an influencer. We'd like to go on that journey to make sure we get the best quality content possible.
Do you ever use influencer marketing platforms?
We have occasionally briefed out to, generally speaking, when it's an advocate campaign where we're looking to work with hundreds of influencers, because in order for us to kind of have that relationship one-to-one, it's kind of not possible unless you have clones, which I wish I did sometimes. But we find that it works best to work through other platforms for something like that, where especially the kind of the platforms where you can upload a brief and then filter through their content and then through the individual at that point, instead of trying to source the 100 perfect people. We find it easier to flip the process for something like that.
Is that part of an existing campaign, or can that be a campaign in its entirety?
Usually it's part of an existing campaign. So I don't think actually we've ever purely outsourced to another agency. I think it's always just as a support mechanism. So I think, for example, if we're looking to include mid-level influencers, who generally speaking, we tend to work within the 30K to 150K reach mark. So we'll use those as almost like the heroes of the campaign, and then we'll support them with advocates at a slightly lower level, and then usually look to a platform to support us for something like that.
And in terms of the revenue split on that, is it the mid-tier get 80% of the budget and then 20% goes on the platforms? Obviously, that's case by case, or is it 50-50?
It really is case by case. So I think it completely depends on what the client's objectives are and what they're looking to get from that campaign. So obviously, if there's striving for engagement, then obviously we'd upweigh the advocate marketing budget. Whereas if they're looking for reach, then we'd look potentially more to the mid-tier influencers. So there's no specific rule, I wouldn't say. And I think that really depends on the strategy put forward at the beginning.
Do you think engagement and reach are the metrics that moving forward we will need? Or do you think that we actually need some other stats in there that, I don't know, on, you know, you spend £1 and you get £10 back when you can do it on other medias? Do you think we can get to that point with influencer marketing?
I'm really hoping so, because obviously at the end of the day, marketers are always looking to increase their bottom line and trying to sell that story in. I think, you know, we've got the really nice soft metrics of engagement, and then it's beyond that, the reach, kind of the eyeballs to that content is also really important. But I think at the end of the day, if there's any way we can prove that influencer marketing drives that bottom line, we can only improve and be winning, basically, because that's an ongoing conversation that we're having with clients, trying to link that through. And I know there's things like UTM links that we're trying to use with influencers, but they just don't work for the content purposes that audiences are used to. People aren't really used to clicking through, I don't think, as much on like an influencer post as, for example, they are on a paid social post coming from a client. The expectation isn't there. So I don't know whether a bit of it is training the audience or whether there's some other way that we can potentially look to do that. I think there is a slight gap in the industry as a whole for research studies within influencer marketing, which the Seven Stars are looking into at the moment, which is quite exciting.
What will you be researching there?
So we are looking into effectively the frequency of which people remember a brand having seen an influencer campaign. It's all a bit up in the air at the moment as to exactly what this research will entail, but we're very excited to understand more and effectively be able to prove the effectiveness of influencer marketing beyond just reach and engagement.
Do you think that YouTube, in terms of trackability, is a better platform for you than Instagram?
It's interesting, really, because I think each platform does different things. I think what's really great at the moment is Instagram having the shoppable tool. I think we'll see a massive surge in that for brands with influencer marketing in particular. I think YouTube is great for long format content. I don't think anyone else has really nailed that. I know that Instagram are bringing obviously Instagram TV and we've got Facebook Watch, but I think everyone still goes to YouTube for that long format content.
Have you ever done an Instagram TV, a bit of paid social?
We haven't yet. So that's something, again, something I'd really like, quite keen to explore.
You should, Sophie Hannah Richardson, she's got some good Instagram TV stats, I tell you.
Oh, really?
Yes, some of her videos are over a million on Instagram TV. Yeah. So the only one that I really see succeeding.
But that's what's really interesting is that, a little bit like what we were talking about earlier, where in order to have that cut through, you just have to take those risks, especially creatively, and kind of learn those new tools and those new platforms and just go with them and see if it works for you. Because it's so great, because we're such a mobile industry in a way, and there's still so much experimentalness, experimentation that we can still do because we're so new and quite young, then it makes us quite exciting. And if we can be at the forefront of that through things like Instagram TV, I think that's great. I think it's just getting clients to come on board with that as well, in order for them to take that risk, because we need both the influencer and the client to be up for it. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, it will be successful to then learn from it to be ongoing with it. So it takes, I think, a specific kind of client and influencer to create those kind of campaigns.
At the beginning of this year, did you sit down as a team at the Seven Stars and say what your goals are in terms of influencer marketing for the rest of 2019?
That's really interesting. So we actually, at the Seven Stars, we do what's called our annual biz planning. So we'll look at every single department within the company in April and sit down and kind of assess what they've achieved in the past year and what their goals are for the following year. So we did that for the influencer and partnerships team that I sit within. And then we also had a bit of an update to everyone, because I think at the end of December, within the industry, the kind of the Wild West that we were talking about, we kind of wanted to talk about that and make it an open conversation. So we had an internal meeting updating everyone on where the industry was at, where we see it going, and what we personally at the Seven Stars are doing about it, basically.
Which will lead into your research.
Exactly, yeah. So we're hoping to move that forward. That's still very much up in the air as to exactly what that will entail. But I think it's something that every agency and client should really be looking to do, especially with such a new industry. We need to start looking into the numbers, I guess, and also seeing what the effects are beyond engagement and reach.
Do you think there will be some victims when that does happen and it does get cleaned up? And who will they be? Because there are a lot of people within influencer marketing now. So many companies have set up in the last sort of 2 years.
Yeah.
And Wild West does also equate to money.
It does. I think there's a little bit of acceptance into the fact that using things like hashtag ad, if you haven't before and you do now, that it's okay. But if you continue to buy bots or things like that, then effectively, why would you? Kind of, it's all out in the open. So if you continue to use those practices, then you will eventually get caught and it will make you less appealing to work with. Effectively, hence why we're thinking 2019 is the year for the influencer marketing industry to come of age, because effectively, you've gone through the teenage years of trying it out and seeing what will make you as successful as possible. But there needs to be that slight adultness about it, of making sure you're regulated, making sure your content is on point with the brief to make it appealing, but also making sure that you're just applying where things like the ASA and effectively covering yourself. Because we wouldn't want any of our influencers, for example, who was enforced that they use hashtag ad, because we would never want it to get to a point where, for example, if ASA one day do say, all content that doesn't have hashtag ad, we're going to pull, or something extreme like that. Or for example, on Instagram, they pulled all those accounts in the off Instagram last year. We would never want it to get to that point. So I think as long as both agencies, clients and influencers alike are all making those steps towards becoming more transparent, more self-regulated to an extent, I think that there's opportunity for everyone to succeed. I think if there's potential scope where people are falling into bad habits again, then there may be a slight filtering out process.
You talked earlier about doing the event with Time Out. Are you going to be doing more of that this year? And why has that proven successful before, doing actual sort of events and things?
I'm really passionate about events. And when I first started at the Seven Stars, I actually saw the rise within influencer events and was really quite interested in that. So I ran quite a few events with Iceland Foods, and we found that they massively outperformed their effective like still shots of the product. They worked much better, and we ended up having much more kind of authentic ambassadors for the brand. So I think there's influencer marketing events in themselves, but then as we get that more integrated approach towards the entire marketing, media and advertising spend, I think we're going to see a rise in experiential. I think experiential events are seeing a surge in themselves as people are clinging to that, wanting to know someone like me, wanting a real experience. Millennials in particular, we know, love experiences and kind of the hands-on approach to brands and having that personal connection to them. So I think we're seeing a surge in experiential, but then also what is almost kind of hand in hand is the surge in influencer, because it's effectively the same thing. They're looking towards people and the people behind those brands instead of the cold product itself. So I think they work really well together. So especially this year, I'm hoping to bring that in a lot more with the Seven Stars, and we're working on a few things, not signed off yet, so unfortunately I can't tell you about them, but yeah, we'll watch this space.
Wait and see, exactly. Yeah. Out of the clients that you do have at the Seven Stars, you've obviously done a lot of work with Iceland. The other roster of clients, what is the percentage of them that do influencer marketing as well?
So we tend to find that a lot of our foodie clients love influencer marketing because it just makes sense on so many levels. Obviously, you've got all the foodie influencers cooking from scratch, as well as hitting the parenting audience when you're looking for quick and healthy meals, so convenience. We've worked with a lot of food clients. I initially wondered if everyone thought I was a complete foodie or something, because I just kept on getting all these food clients approaching me. So I was looking at a lot of delicious food all day on Instagram profiles and stuff. But then we're also, what's really lovely actually is I think that's expanding more into just retail as a whole. So we worked with Go Outdoors on outdoor influencer campaigns, which worked really well, and we're looking to do again this year. But then also even from the finance sector, where they're potentially looking to have that human approach from something that could potentially be seen as a slightly drier subject to kind of liven it up. So I think before, where nervous categories were potentially not diving in, we're starting to see them go all in now, which is great. So I think before there was much more kind of the safer zone of categories, whereas now it's just opening doors as a whole to everyone and seeing how they can best use it.
Have you done any influencer marketing on influencers' podcasts for your clients?
That's something that we keep on pushing forward. So interestingly, what tends to happen is we'll mention a podcast, because we're trying to push that forward because it's relatively new to our clients at the moment. And what tends to happen is we'll then use them for social, but then with the view of that long term, we would then be integrated into their podcast. So I think, again, it's that integration of starting off small and then growing into more channels outside of social.
So I suppose the retention rates on podcasts, and when you're looking across that, I mean, do you have to explain that to clients as well? So how long you're going to be on an Instagram post, how long you're going to, you know, I think the stat's something like 93% of people, if they start a podcast, listen the whole way through. Mm-hmm. And it's just in the same way when you're actually sit down with a magazine and read it, it's just a bit different, isn't it? Or invest in a YouTube video as opposed to just a scroll. Mm-hmm. And do you think that those are taken into consideration enough with budgets, because you've got reach and engagement is the metric of like time?
I think what's really interesting as well is obviously we have a digital team who sell ads within podcasts. So, you know, the little ads within. So there are those conversations that clients are very familiar with. And then there's integrating live reads, even almost within radio, and then moving that over into podcasts. I think that's a learning. And again, it's those clients that we need to have that jump and to be creative. And also it's the same thing with influencers. We're looking for influencers as well as clients that are looking to expand and grow and be the first to effectively do something. Mm. I imagine it will take the same format as what we've seen before, where I think it would be great for food. And what's really nice as well is there are so many different topics, even finance, that could work really well within podcasts, that you have a captive audience that I think potentially at the moment we're seeing clients dip their toes into, but I can't wait for them to go all in so we can start experimenting with that more.
A big thanks to Zoe for coming on the show. You've been listening to Blogosphere Serious Influence with me, Alice Audley. Be sure to check out blogospheremagazine.com for influencer industry updates. And why not treat yourself to a magazine subscription whilst you're there?